Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. VJ Pandian is with us today. He's a horticulture agent and educator for UW Extension. He works out of Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. And we'll talk with him about what's going on with tomato plants. We can talk about weeds. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, and I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. VJ Pandian, welcome back. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Larry. Good to see you.
Well, I tell you what, I was on the phone last night talking with a friend, and she told me she is not happy with her tomatoes this year. What problems are you seeing with tomato plants?
You're not the only one, Larry. I think I'm getting a lot of inquiries about it. I mean, usually in the past, we get like the typical tomato diseases like septoria, early blight, and, you know, in late summer, late blight. But this year is very unusual. Most of the inquiries are related to environmental stress issues. We had a lot of heat drought conditions, and many of these heat and drought conditions triggered all kind of bizarre things, actually. People are noticing some blossom drop, poor blossoms on the tomatoes, not much growth on it, and most of the leaves seems to be curled upward. And people are also noticing a lot of discolored leaves and distorted and twisted leaves as well, too. So if you look into all these kind of bizarre patterns in tomatoes, the most common thing what people are noticing at this time is that they didn't see much tomato fruit at all. And one of the reasons what I'm suspecting and I'm seeing actually is actually because of the heat and the drought stress we had, that kind of had an influence on the flower development. And generally, tomatoes, they prefer like a temperature of 70 to 80 degrees, you know, for mostly for blossom production. But once the temperature starts heating at 85 degrees and above, they start to abort the flower production. And whatever the flowers they have, they need to be pollinated within 48 hours or 50 hours. And by the time of 48 to 50 hours, if the temperature peaks up to from 85 to 90 degrees, then it really aborts the pollen production as well, too. The pollen becomes so sticky, and it kind of ruins the pollination aspect of the tomato. So we had in probably in mid to late July, we had a lot of days, you know, where the temperature picked up to 90 degrees. There's not much rain here, at least in southeast part of Wisconsin. And we can start to see some of the pedicels of the flowers dropping down. So this seems to be one of the common phenomenon that I've been observing here in southeast part of Wisconsin.
The other
worst part is that many people, you know, during this hot, dry time, they've been spraying quite a bit in the lawn, actually. And most of the spray drift affects the tomatoes as well, too. People doesn't know that weed and feed do have actually herbicide in it. And these things vaporizes very easily and drift to a tomato plant and cause all this kind of bizarre twisting and curling of the leaf. And the worst part is actually in container-grown tomatoes. Because of the hot, dry conditions, many people, many gardeners have to water the tomatoes in almost every day or twice a day. So when you tend to water twice a day every day, you're also leaching out most of the nutrients. So most of the tomato plants going in the tomatoes, their leaves seem to be yellowish in color, lacking nutrients, so they have been stunted in appearance as well, too. So
lots going on there. What can we do next year to kind of try to prevent these things from happening?
Well, we can't stop our Mother Nature anyway. So all we can do is, you know, pray for the best weather. But a few things we can do. One, you know, with all this climate change talk going on and the UN report about the climate change, and there's a good forecasting of, you know, there's a probability of frequent heat stress conditions that's going to happen. Maybe we can choose some better tomato varieties which are more heat tolerant. Say this coming winter, if you look at some of the seed catalogs, you know, instead of growing some of the regular typical tomatoes, select for some of the varieties which are more heat and drought tolerant. And that would really help in, you know, further up in your tomato production. The second thing I would say when your temperature gets about 85 degrees, don't put anything in your lawn, especially weed and feed, or don't apply any type of, you know, herbicides in your lawn. And right at 85, these herbicides vaporizes. And then when the tomatoes are exceptionally vulnerable to herbicide drift, and then probably I would say mulch your tomatoes using some straw or some sort of like a weed-free hay, or maybe even, you know, using some sort of, you know, compost, mulch your tomatoes. You know, tomatoes really like, you know, cool, moist conditions. So mulching also helps in conserving the soil moisture and providing a cool temperature for the root system as well, too. That's pretty much we can do, actually, on tomatoes.
Yeah, but that's quite a bit. So there are some things at least we can do to ensure a better crop next year. Julie in Lancaster's online with a question. Let's go there. Hi, Julie.
Hi. My question has to do with my newly planted apple tree. And I discovered that I planted it, or have a cedar growing near it, which I need. It's small. I'm going to take that down. But I'm worried that my tree already has been affected by the cedar tree in proximity to it. And then I have Japanese beetles that attack the poor tree. So I want to know what I can do about both of those things.
Well, the cedar apple rust disease is one of the common ones. And it needs an alternate host. So, you know, if you do have a cedar tree, it can also jump into apple trees and crab apple trees. I mean, since you're going to actually remove your hawthorn tree or a cedar tree nearby, then you're actually breaking the life cycle of this alternating between the two host plants. And that will really help in minimizing the infection that's going to happen in your apple tree. In general, the cedar apple tree, you know, doesn't cause economically, you know, a significant damage on your fruit crop. Maybe it'll cause some foliar, you know, defoliation on your apple leaves, but not necessarily ruin your crop quite a bit. So good sanitation would also help in minimizing the inoculum, but, you know, since you're going to remove one of the host plants, I think that would be absolutely, a fantastic idea to do. Say with Japanese beetles, well, according to our state entomologist, overall this year, the Japanese beetle seems to be a lower in number compared to the previous years. But needless to say, you know, when they do damage quite a bit, especially on the leaves. So we do have an extension publication that talks extensively about managing Japanese beetles under different set of landscape conditions. Now, in general, in apple fruits and stuff, though they will actually strip those leaves off, they skeletonize the leaves off, but in terms of damaging the fruits quite a bit, it's minimum. It prefers most of foliage one. So there are some products that has been recommended for spray in landscape plants, but I would tend not to use it at this time because it's already late in the season. The trees are done for this year, it seems like. So better you watch it out for next year. Maybe if the beetle starts munching on it in June, then you can start applying for those things.
Good luck, Julie. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Grant emailed, he's a neophyte tomato grower, and says he has one plant that's grown tall and very little fruit. He's been told he needs to use a low nitrogen fertilizer, like a 5-10-10 type, to encourage the production of fruit. Would you agree with that suggestion?
Well, it all depends. Say, generally, you know, if you frequently fertilize your tomatoes, then probably it's going to trigger more foliage growth rather than more blossoms. So, for example, if a gardener applies, you know, like any type of 10-10-10 or any type of liquid fertilizers every week, that is too much of fertilization. So, you know, that would really spur up the growth of the tomato and the foliage, but not necessarily the blossoms. Now, you know, again, we also have to put in the perspective of this year's weather conditions as well, too. So if you don't get enough blossoms, the one of the other things we need to like take a look into it, what does the temperature looks like? If it's growing in a high tunnels or probably if it's growing in open field, what is the temperature right in that area is? If the temperature is above 85 degrees, 90 degrees, and the night temperature is 70 degrees, that's not going to trigger that much of blossom either. And the second thing factor also takes into consideration is humidity. I mean, Larry, last week was like the humidity in Wisconsin was like more than 75%. Yeah. And the humidity also affects the pollen production as well, too. And so the lack of pollen can also affect the ruin, you know, the flower productions as well, too, the fruit production as well, too. So it all depends. In general, if you fertilize frequently, then probably it's going to trigger more foliage.
Dorothy emailed to ask if she can reuse soil that she has in containers this year for next year's plantings.
It depends upon what type of plant crop that you're going to plant. So, for example, this year, if you plant a tomato in that container, and next year also planning on planting tomato back again in the same container with the same media, then I would not recommend it. But if you're going to mix it up with something else, like some planting some cucumbers or maybe planting some sort of like, you know, flowering plants, then probably yes. But in general, you know, if your media seems to be contaminated with some sort of root rot fungal pathogens, then in the better case is to better to have some sort of like a new media in it. But if you're planning on planting some same tomatoes and growing every year in the same media, then it's not a good idea to use the same media.
Steve wonders, what kinds of nut trees do well in suburban yards, but not walnuts?
So one of my colleagues way up in Bayfield County, Jason Fishback, you know, he's been had a great success and he's been promoting hazelnut production. So if you're really interested in hazelnut, that would be a good option to try. So that may not actually, you know, that doesn't have that kind of jungle toxicity effect like compared to black walnut. So I think you'll have a better luck in trying with some hazelnut. Now, I also heard that, you know, you can also try hickory nuts as well, too, Carpathian walnut. Carpathian walnut, you know, you need to plant them a little bit in a protected spot. Sometimes in an open field, you know, you might actually experience some winter damage. But, you know, various catalogs say that it's hardy for Wisconsin. Yes, you can try. Also, you can try hickory nuts. Yes.
So a lot there, you know, you could even, you know, oaks are may not provide you for your own consumption, but their oak trees are great trees for all of the hundreds of insects and animals that feed off of it.
Absolutely. And the a lot of wildlife habitat, it supports that. Same thing with the beeches also, too. You can try American beeches. If your soil is slightly acidic soil and an understory one, you can also try. I actually, back when I was in Green Bay, my predecessor, Paul Hortman, planted pecan tree, hardy pecan tree. I mean, absolutely, it is fantastic. It's growing really well, but it takes a while to produce a pecan. It takes about more than 15 years. And I recently also saw it actually at Morton Arboretum down in Chicago area as well, too. It's been growing successfully. So, but it's a bit hard to get some hardy pecans.
Yeah. VJ Pandey and our guest today, as we talk all things gardening with him, I hope he'll join in with your questions. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, VJ Pandian, horticulture educator for Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, covering lots of things, maybe berries. What kind of berry would you like to know more about? Are you having problems growing berries, looking for a variety that suits your area, or other questions as well? I hope you'll join in. Tom's joined in from Green Bay, so let's go there. Tom, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. It happened last year, and it seems to be happening again this year. My tomato plants look great. Got all kinds of tomatoes up, but they don't ripen. What am I doing wrong?
Well, that's an interesting question. So, one, probably, you know, if the fruits are mature enough, then probably when it gets closer to, the first frost, if it still doesn't ripe, just harvest it. The second fall, you know, it all depends upon the variety, too. I mean, check some of the varieties. Some of the beefsteak type of varieties take a while to mature. For ripening up for the tomatoes, they do need certain times in a higher temperature. So it can enhance actually the skin to, start initiate the ripening process. So it's kind of very bizarre. It's a mystery why your fruit is not ripening, but it's as long as it's mature enough, then probably you can harvest them and you can keep it next to your kitchen counter table at 70, 75 degrees. It'll start to ripen naturally itself. But other than that, I really don't know why it's not ripening.
Yeah. I've had that in the past, and you're right. You can set a few up on the kitchen counter, and generally they'll ripen that way. Tom, good luck with that. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Again, 800-642-1234. You know, Vijay, there are a number of persistent perennial weeds that cause gardeners' problems. And one that comes up a lot on the show is Canada thistle. How can we control weeds like Canada thistle?
Absolutely, Larry. Canada thistle is a nightmare for the gardeners. And because this plant is very unique in compared to any other weeds. One, its rhizomes, its extensive rhizomes it has. Some of the horizontal rhizomes can spread about like 15 feet. And the taproots, the main roots, can go about 6 feet down to the ground. And it also reproduces by seeds as well, too. So, and the interesting thing about the Canada thistle is that those rhizomes, even if it's a quarter inch, if there's any leftover, it can start a new plant. So, and it can survive in dry conditions, full sun, you know, even in pot shade, it can amazingly grows really well. So it's very well adapted plant. The problem with many gardeners is that when we have a weed, the first thing that we tend to do is that we either hand pull it, or we rototill it, or we hoe it. If you do any of this normal thing on a Canada thistle, you're going to spur up more of its growth. Say avoid any tilling or hand pulling or hoeing on Canada thistle. Every time when you till it or hand pull it, you're breaking those rhizomes, and every quarter inch or even a half inch of those rhizomes can generate some new plants again. So avoid that. The best thing to do is to try to find a way how to exhaust this root system, because the root system stores a lot of energy. And when you exhaust the root system, the plant will die. So if you look at the best time to control these Canada thistle is that they have the lowest amount of energy beginning in about like in early to mid-June. And that's where they start to grow, actually, producing some more foliage because they need to synthesize. So if you start moving them down right around in first week of June, you're going to further weaken the plant. And you need to keep mowing it every 21 days. So this repeated mowing, beginning in first week of June, can produce you a successful result in completely removing this Canada thistles from your garden in about 2 years. The next vulnerable stage of this Canada thistle is in probably in about late September, just before we get our first frost. that's the time the canopies will sense that, okay, it's time to go dormant. So it'll shut down all its, you know, nutrient synthesizing leaves and direct all the nutrients back to its root system. So if you do any type of spot spray, either with Roundup or any other herbicides, then those herbicides can also get translocated to the root system and knocks down the plant as well too. So again, that requires also at least 2-3 years of, you know, spot spray application to successfully control this Canada diesel. So
Sue emailed just relating to chemicals. She found that the product, I think it's called Bonide Stump Out, very effective. She discovered it when removing a buckthorn hedge several years ago. Well, for that, she tried it on other woody weeds and thistles, and also effective there as well, those that have the, you know, like Canada thistle. She buys the liquid, not the granular kind, in a small bottle for about $10 with a brush on cap, and cuts the stem and applies it with the brush to freshly cut stems, and it's absorbed into the plant and kills it. But so that was Bonide Stump Out. Do you know that one, BJ?
Say most of this product, like, you know, comes in a lot of different things. They usually, you know, have an active ingredient either with like a high concentration of triclopyr, and that usually is called as a brush killer that has been commonly used for controlling, you know, buckthorns and stuff. But this particular product, I'm not really aware about it, that has been sold by Bonide. So I'm not specifically aware about this one.
Susan in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I just planted a Crimson King maple, and I'm wondering how often I should water it. And it's in heavy clay soil. And also, if I should fertilize it this fall or wait till next year once it seeds out.
That's a great question. How often to water? Say the newly planted trees, they do need actually 2 times of watering per week. And with the current hot, dry conditions that we had during this growing season, at least I would say for the first couple of months, two times, at least I would say minimum, to water them. The best way to water, I would say, is to take a 2 5-gallon pail, drill a tiny hole, very tiny hole, so the water drips, and set the 2 5-gallon pails in a on the right nearby the root ball of the tree on the opposite ends. And so let it slowly trickles and gets into the root ball. And then, you know, you can fill those things actually, you know, easily. So that's one of the easiest way to water it. But if you exactly ask me how much inch of water they need, minimum, at least they need about, you know, an inch of water per week. And but, you know, how to measure an inch, there's a lot of calculations for that. But I think the better it to go with the, you know, watering with a bucket system is my best way to go. The second thing about is that do not fertilize your trees, not especially during the first or second year. Generally, we don't recommend fertilizing the trees because the tree have an extensive root system and they are hunters. They will hunt their own nutrients, okay, so not to fertilize it. Rather, you know, I would recommend using some mulch. So apply some mulch about, you know, 3 inch deep and spread it as much as you can. And keep the mulch about like 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree. So mulch helps in cooling the soil, conserving the soil moisture, and that will really spur up some of the root development that, you know, that's going to be taking place in the next few weeks after you planted. So mulching would be your best option to do. Mm-hmm. And if you have any other weeds growing nearby, remove those weeds. And especially avoid planting any perennials or annuals within the drip line area of the tree. You know, I know sometimes it's not practicable, but at least, you know, try avoiding planting closer to the trunk of the tree because those perennials, including lawn grasses, they all compete for moisture. So give the plant its own personal space, root space for them to grow and thrive. So those are some tips that I would recommend for newly planted trees.
Yeah, and I might add that just in the terms of the watering, I think it's important to water way later than you think it might be necessary. Wouldn't you agree with that, VJ? A lot of times I've been told to water right up until the ground freezes.
Yes. Larry, generally for deciduous trees, you keep watering it when the leaves start turning yellow. But for evergreens, it's a different story. You keep watering it till the ground freezes. Yeah. Now, one good indication is that, okay, what if my soil is already moist? Shall I still keep watering it? No. So you place your palm underneath the mulch. Check how moist the soil is. If the top surface of soil is slightly dry, then you start watering it. If it's already moist, then you can skip watering those things. And that's very important in the fall, because in fall, when the temperature starts cooling down and we start getting some more rain, you know, too much moisture could also trigger root rot diseases, and you don't want that. So check your soil moisture before you water the trees, especially in the fall.
Let's go to Jeff in Chicago next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
So I'm having, this is my second year of growing cucumbers, and we have great leaves, lots of bees on the flowers, but once the cucumbers coming out, we get a real baseball end, and we get a very small, almost thumbprint other end. So they're very lopsided. So just wondering if there's anything we can do differently. They're grown in a above-ground container.
You could certainly blame it on heat. So it also related to pollination issue as well too. So when you have a high temperature and high, you know, high humidity, you know, it affects many of the pollinators as well too. So due to lack of pollinations, the cucumbers will be highly misshapen as well. The other thing also related to high temperature, especially if you're growing in a high container system, what happens is that the soil dries out very faster. And coupled with the heat stress, it will trigger more male flower rather than female flowers. So that could also cause some poor number of, you know, cucumbers as well too. So also, if the soil is also very dry and you taste some of those cucumbers, they will be very bitter in taste. So these are all some good indications that tells you that it's all related to heat and moisture stress issue. So bitter tasting, misshapen fruits, as well as, you know, too much male flowers, not enough female flowers.
There you go, Jeff. Thanks for calling. Harold in Superior, your turn. Hi, Harold.
Yes, hi. Before I get started with my question, I just want to mention that we grow hops on our fence. And ivies, and oh man, those vines just grow like a foot a day. And then we also have on the more towards the front of our house, we have these grapes, and they're about the size of blueberries. They don't get real big like we typically think of grapes, but they're small, but they're really good. And we like them. Some people don't because of the seeds in them. But anyway, we've had good luck with that. My question is on Juneberries. I love Juneberries. I drive 50 miles to pick some, but they have kind of a short window of when they come ripe. So I was thinking about planting some type of Juneberry tree. From what I've read, they're in the same class somewhat as choke cherries with the antioxidant component to them. They're supposed to be super, super, super food for you, super healthy. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so where do we find Juneberries? Where does Harold get some? He's in Superior.
You can easily get Juneberries. And Juneberries are one of those you know, amelanchier plants, and, you know, you could get it in many garden centers. And, you know, it's also called service berries as well, too. Like, Carl, you mentioned it, you know, it has a very short window where the fruits mature, and the birds usually pick it up before you do it. So, and you could shop it any garden centers. They'll come under amelanchiers or service berries, you know, those are all great ones. The fruit tastes amazingly really well. You can use it in pie making, and, you know, and I know I tried it actually as a juice, but you can also make it as a jam as well, too. So there are a lot of different cultivars of, you know, Juneberries available to for purchase. So, yes, you can do it. Yeah, you can get it easily.
Yeah, and it might be called service berry or amelanchier, as Vijay was saying as well. So that may be why you weren't seeing it, Harold. Good luck with that. Thank you for calling. Terry in Melrose, it's your turn. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about germination this year. I've had several seeds that did not come up this year, and I've never had that problem before. And not only that, they did not, none of them germinated. Planted it like beans and parsnips and carrots, and no seeds came up at all. I mean, it just, is it just the year, or was the seeds, and they were new this year? So, wondering what's going on.
Yeah,
that's a really tough one. So, in any way, for germination of a seeds, you know, they need some ideal moisture condition, and they need actually a good oxygen supply as well too, for them to germinate. So if you plant the seeds too deeply, they may not be able to germinate. If there is a lack of moisture or irregular watering, then probably that may not be sufficient enough for them to break the seed coat and to stir up the, you know, the germination process as well too. So these are some of the two primary factors that affect the germination. But there is also one other factor that also affects the germination is your soil temperature. So we had a fluctuating soil temperature this growing season, this spring. So some days was very cold, some days the soil temperature spiked up quite a bit, and then it dropped back again. So this fluctuating soil temperature can also influence the germination. So for example, like a bean plant, they need actually about like, you know, 65 degrees, you know, 60, 65 degrees of soil temperature for the minimum to germinate. So either if they, you know, for 2 days it's up to 65 and then it dropped down actually and became more at 50s or 55, then that also influences the germination as well. So these are some of the three factors that I typically see in the garden that influence the germination for many of those outdoor seeding vegetable crops.
And thank you, Terry, for calling. Jim in Olson, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello. I would like to know the proper way to trim back raspberries so they can produce more raspberries for the following year.
That's a great question. You know, what type of raspberries you have, either a summer-bearing raspberry or if you're having an overbearing raspberry, because the pruning for both these things are a bit different.
Summer-bearing.
Summer-bearing.
Okay. So the summer-bearing raspberries, you know, you need to prune. There are two pruning cycles. So the first one, after you harvest them right away, okay, you prune the cane. So after you did with the final harvest, so prune those canes back to the ground on those one because those canes are done for the season, okay? So these summer-bearing raspberries, you know, they have two different canes. One is called primal cane, another one is called floric canes. The primal canes, which typically produce the leaves, they don't produce the flowers. Only the second year, the same primal cane becomes a floric cane and starts producing the flower. After they set the flower and produce the fruit, they die back. So that's why right after you harvest them, you prune those canes back naturally down to the ground. And then come back in about like early in the spring before the growth appears. That's where you need to prune some of those primal canes because they produce a lot of primal canes during the growing season. So generally, you know, you need to have about like a 5 to 6 sturdy canes. Primal canes is good enough. So the remaining, you thin them down to the crown. And then wait till after the frost has been done and you tip some of those canes back. Sometimes depends on where in Wisconsin they live. If you do have a frost injury, you could nip those, you know, tip of the canes off. But if you don't have it, then leave it like it is. So these are the two times you need to think about pruning your summer-bearing raspberry. Now, for people who have ever-bearing raspberry, it's very simple. Right after Thanksgiving Day, just take your lawnmower, mow it down to the ground. That's pretty simple. Because, you know, they produce the flowers in the same cane itself in the growing season. So you don't have to worry about what time to be pruning and those things. Yeah.
All right, Jim, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Jim and Mauston emailed to ask how butternuts are doing. Are they recovering?
Butternuts are hardy for Wisconsin, you know, especially for southern part of Wisconsin. But I don't see them that very often, you know, planted in the landscape, because they do also have, you know, the same type of, just like black walnut, they do also have jugular toxicity as well, too. So, but I haven't seen that extensively planted in southern part of Wisconsin.
Craig emailed, he bought a 6-foot juniper tree, which had they planted with the wrapped roots left as is. His landscaper did this, said the wrapping would decompose. He doesn't know if the wrapping is burlap and wonders if this is okay.
That's a great question. If the wrapping is a burlap, yes, within a year, it will naturally decompose it. If it's more like a nylon type of thing, probably it's better to remove it, because that's going to take a long, 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 long time to, you know, break down. So generally, you know, it is better to open up the burlap, especially in the top side of the B&Bs, and break some of the twines. So that, you know, the tree will have it, will naturally, you know, it helps in easing and decomposing those burlaps. So that used to be the practice. But, you know, if you still see some of the twines that has been, you know, wrapped around the trunk of the tree, just cut it off and, you know, remove some of those burlaps from the top and then water it.
Yeah, it's you don't want to get the tree roots starting to girdle going around themselves, that's for sure. Jane in Chippewa Falls emailed that she has a small urban yard and would like to plant a small tree. This area is on the west side in full sun, gets a lot of wind. She'd like to plant something to benefit pollinators, but she doesn't want one that'll suck her. Any ideas?
Okay, that's a good question. So when you're thinking about planting a new tree in your yard, probably, you know, you need to carefully consider what are the elements actually around you. First, you need to start with the soil, whether your soil is dry or moist. And, you know, you don't want to plant a tree that prefers more dry soil in a wet soil condition, because that's going to cause a lot of headache down the road. Second, the sun. So whether it's going to get full sun, pot shade, or complete shade. So right in this case, probably, you know, it's the west side. Probably it's supposed to, it may get about like 6 to 8 hours of full sun. So that's really good. And other environmental conditions, how far it is from a sidewalk, a driveway, or from a highway, there's also important factors to consider as well, too. So if you're having a more of a, you know, sunny exposure with a lot of wind, and then probably some of the trees that might tolerate those kind of small size trees that may tolerate those kind of conditions would be is either you could go with a Japanese tree lilac. You can also go with a serviceberry. But serviceberry is my personal choice, but it has its own downside. Serviceberry, like in this type of this year's weather condition, they've been very terrible. They didn't take that much of drought conditions very well. They shut down. They started actually going back to fall coloration mode because of the drought stress. So they really prefer a little bit of moist pot-shaped condition, but they'll certainly take full sun very well. Tree lilac, on the other hand, yes, they will take full sun very well, and they'll look fantastic during in the growing season as well, too. So then probably we also have crab apples, too. They also take full sun very well and, you know, can be planted. There are a lot of different type of crab apples that can be also very suitable for your landscape as well. Now, all these plants can support pollinators as well, too. Especially even the wildlife, like a crab apple, if you plant those things, they will certainly help the birds. especially in the wintertime. Certain type of crab apples, you know, their fruits are very persistent. And so many birds will like those things in the wintertime as well, too.
Thank you very much for that question, Jane. Appreciate it. We're, by the way, we're partnering with UW Extension's horticulture program to learn more about your experience listening to Garden Talk. Love to find out what you learned during the show and how you'll put it to use, as well as other ideas perhaps for future Garden Talk topics. So this short questionnaire, just take you a minute or two to fill it out. Just go to WPR.org/Larry. Click on today's show note for a link, or you can type in go.wisc.edu/radio and just take a couple of minutes to fill it out. So we hope you'll do that. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Vijay Pandian, Horticulture Extension Educator for Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine Counties. Talking all things gardening today with him. And let's take a call. Barb in Pewaukee, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. I wanted to comment on the gentleman that had problems germinating his seeds. I had the same problem. After about third or fourth time I planted the seeds, I realized, well, why don't I do what I do for the lawn? And I put some straw over it, and every single seed I think I planted germinated for me.
Oh.
That's a great suggestion. You know, having a little bit of mulching on top of it helps in conserving the moisture. And when you have a uniform moisture, that will really help in spurring up the germination as well, too. Now, one of the other strategy is that if you see, if you have a large size seeds, sometimes what I tend to do them is that I will soak them in a water 30 minutes before planting. And that will also spur up in germination as well, too. In some crops like okra, people soak them, you know, quite a longer time, overnight sometimes, and they do that. So I think having the even moistureness, you know, helps in breaking those seed coats and helping spur up the germination. Yes. That's a great suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Barb. Appreciate it. Dave in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Dave. Dave, are you there? Well, let's try. Dave had a question about Brussels sprouts not sprouting.
Brussels sprout, not sprouting. So Brussels sprouts usually take a while for them actually to produce those, you know, the sprouts. Generally, they actually start maturing. You know, they take about like, you know, 90 to 100 days for them to harvest. So perhaps, you know, if in case if you have a very high temperature, that could also influence, you know, the sprout flower head as well, too. The other thing you also need to be aware about is that they also do need some, you know, full sun. So if you plant them completely in shade, then probably that could also influence the sprout head formation as well, too.
Yep, I have good points. Kay in St. Francis, your turn. Hi, Kay.
Well, good afternoon, Larry. I don't know if you can help me with this, but my question is this. I just moved into an apartment complex, and I believe that they have water softener water softener. And I was curious, will that water adversely affect my houseplants?
Not really directly, but over time, it will build up some of the salt accumulations. You know, you will start to see them on the surface of the soil. So you may want to think about, you know, repotting them and bringing some fresh potting mix. You know, at least about like every other year or every year, depending upon your type of a houseplant that you use. So generally, when you start to see those type of, you know, salt accumulation, you start to see some white powdery stuff on the surface of the soil. That's a good indication that it tells you, yeah, my soil needs to be replenished. If not, it's going to affect the nutrient availability for the plant to uptake. You will start to see some more leaves turning yellow. You have a very poor growth. And so that influences the pH of your media. says take it out in the springtime and just, add some fresh potting mix into the container and replant it.
There you go, Kay. Thank you for calling. Jennifer in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I'm calling about an Autumn Brilliance amelanchier tree. We've had it for 10 years, and up until now, it produced amazing amounts of fruit. I used to pick like half a gallon just from standing on the sidewalk, leave the birds have the rest. This year, it had no fruit at all. So I'm wondering what could have gone wrong. Is it possible this will recover, or should we just take it out?
You're not the only one. I had a similar issue down in Kenosha, right in front of my office. I did have an amelanchier, and they produced the flowers, but they didn't set that much of fruit. We did have some fruits, but not enough. And it goes back, actually, due to the fluctuating temperature that we had in the springtime. So in certain days, it was cool. Certain days, it was very warm. So the amelanchier, when they're actually about to be in bloom, it was very cold. And actually, it affected the pollination of those amelanchiers and created, actually, a lesser number of fruits. So you could blame it on the fluctuating, temperature that happened up in the springtime. So certainly we'll start producing flowers for next season. So keep watering your tree. That is the most important thing. Amelanchiers, they can tolerate drought to a certain extent, but not super dry. They can't take super dry conditions. So water them. Because right now, if you start watering them, they will start producing, healthy buds for flower buds for next season. So in that way, you can able to get some good flower production for next season.
Thanks, Jennifer. Amanda in Lake Mills. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I always appreciate your show. So I have rose bushes and mock orange bushes, and I have these little shiny beetles crawling all over. I think they're called Japanese beetles. I'm not quite sure, but I was wondering, they look like they're damaging the leaf, the foliage and the flowers. And so I'm wondering what I can do about that.
Well, it certainly looks like a Japanese beetle to me. So what I would do in the morning time, I would go around your plant and I would handpick them and drown them in a soapy water. They're easy to catch in the morning time rather than in the afternoon time, because in the morning time, they're very slow in the metabolic process. So, you can easily trap them. Next year, year or so, if you do start to see some higher population, in your garden, there are a couple of things you can do. You could get some sort of like a netting. You can go to Amazon, any places, you can get some like micro nettings, and which are about like a 0.3, millimeter in size, or even like, 0.4 inches in size. And you can drape those nettings on the top of your plant. And that's one way these nettings will act like a barrier. We are currently doing some trial studies, actually, in trying different sizes of mesh net size and preventing the Japanese beetles attacking on those plants. And in fact, even a mosquito net also does a good job. But if you feel that netting is like too much to you, then of course there are certain products available. I think, in our extension fact sheet, one of the products that has been recommended that works really well, it's a biological control product. It's called BTG, Bacillus thuringiensis galleria. And it's in the fact sheet on Japanese beetle. So you just Google out Japanese beetle, put UW extension, it comes in. And that product, you can spray it. It's slightly expensive to use it, but if you do want to use it and spray it, start spraying it in June, probably like in mid-June or something like that when you start to see some more damages. So
there you go, Amanda. Thank you so much for calling. Somebody wondered if you could use pine needles as mulch for tomatoes.
Yes, you can use pine needles. You can also use, even straws as for mulching or anything. Yes, you can use any type of organic matters for mulching as well. The whole purpose actually of using these type of organic products for mulching is that, one, not only conserving the soil moisture and providing a cool system for the roots, But also, you know, you're adding and incorporating organic matter into the soil. And these organic matters is really helpful for building up your structure of your soil and also helps in better retainability of your soil moisture and nutrients.
Sarah wondered if what's happening to the lilacs this year. The leaves are turning black and falling off.
That's a good question. And in fact, today, this morning, our state pathologist, Dr. Brian Huddleston, mentioning about this lilac, he's been witnessing a lot of septorial leaf spot on lilac this year. And that causes all these kind of brown spots and patchiness on the leaves. So you may want to check on the fact sheet about, you know, septorial leaf spots on lilac. And, you know, of course, it's too late to do anything right now, but in fall, do some good cleaning and remove all those dead leaves and stuff like that. And in springtime, promote some better aeration. Pruning some of the older canes and stuff like that helps in better promotion of those aerations around your plant. And avoid any kind of overhead irrigation if possible. So.
BJ Pandy and our guest today, we're partnering with Extension to learn more about your experiences listening to Garden Talk. Love to have you participate with us. Love to find out what you learned during the show and how you'll put it to use, as well as we'd like some ideas from you for future Garden Talk topics. And all you need to do is go to WPR.org/Larry. Click on today's show note for a link, and you'll get that link, and there's just a few questions for you to answer. So again, go to WPR.org/Larry, click on today's show note for a link, and it will just take a couple of minutes to fill out that little questionnaire, and you can tell us what you learned and have some suggestions for future shows. BJ Pandian's horticulture extension educator for Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us. Talking with VJ Pandian, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. So as we listen to him, what gardening questions do you have? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We had some emails in, let's see, we've got Betty emailed. She uses a blend of compost, food-grade vermiculite, and peat moss in her raised beds and in her pots as well. At the end of the season, she bags up the soil left in the pots or mounds it up on her raised garden to recycle the next year. She's wondering if there's anything else she can do, in essence, sterilize the soil, kind of, is what she says.
Well, that's a great question. And you know, generally, you know, when you add a lot of these organic matters for your raised bed, they will naturally start decomposing by themselves. And but certain crop plants are like a magnet for diseases or insects. And I mean, if you tend to use those media back again in the same raised bed, first of all, I would do a crop rotation. I would not plant the same type of crop in the same raised bed again. I would mix it up with something else if possible. And second of all, you can also always add some fresh organic matter in the soil as well. That will also help in further diluting some of the spores and stuff like that. That will also be very helpful. Mulching also helps, actually, especially, you know, if you're planning on planting some tomatoes and stuff like that, you know, when you put some mulching, that will have like a barrier. Now, in terms of recycling the media again, you know, certainly you can recycle it back again, but plant a different crop in it. I would not take a risk of planting back again the same type of crop or a variety back in the same spot.
All right. Well, let's take a call. Cheryl in Wausau, we'll give you a chance.
I have a quick question. Thank you guys for doing this because it helps me out. I'm new to Wisconsin, and we have a ton of raspberry bushes at our house. They were from a previous owner, but the raspberries are really small. They're very small, and it's a really huge hedge of bushes, but the raspberries are super small.
Okay. So if the raspberries are very small, first of all, you know, sometimes it could also be because of poor pollination. So, you know, and that poor pollination could also be because, you know, maybe the raspberry bush was not pruned very well. So if you have too many, primocanes or floricanes growing and it's like a big jungle, then it's hard for some of the pollinators to get inside. Generally, raspberries kind of also get pollinated mostly by wind, but bees also plays a major role as well too. So you may want to start thinking about how to properly prune your raspberries and train them in a trellis system, and that will really spur up some of those, your fruit production as well. So think about pruning and training your raspberries.
All right. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for calling. Does that help, by the way?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, because there's a lot of them in there, but I'm like, why are they so small? So perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Yolanda.
You do have an extension.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, VJ.
We have an extension publication that talks about, you know, growing raspberries in Wisconsin, and it details about how to prune them and how to train them in a trellis system. So you can go to our extension learning store website and just Google up growing raspberries in Wisconsin, UW-Madison Extension. It brings you. It's a multi-page booklet. And it has an awesome information. It has a beautiful pictures of how to prune and how to train your raspberries.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yolanda in Burlington, your turn now. Hi, Yolanda.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I'd like to thank you both for this show. It's very informational. My question is, I have already in my garden small blue spruce, beech nut, and black chokeberries. And we have 5 acres, so I need to, you know, dig them up and spread them out. When would be a good time to do that?
What plants do you have again, ma'am?
It's a blue spruce. I have several of them, and a beech nut trees and black chokeberries.
Black chokeberry. Okay. So given the weather conditions that we have right now, I would recommend actually wait till next spring to do it. It's a bit unpredictable, this weather condition seems like. So this week is supposed to be an average of 75s and stuff. Last few weeks, it's been hot and dry. So the plants are very stressed out. And anytime when you transplant them, you're adding more stress on the plants because you are chopping the root system, taking the root ball, moving to another site location, and the plants have to quickly acclimatize to that area before the winter hits in. So that's a lot of pressure on the plant. So far, this growing season, the plants are really stressed out. So if you want to have a high probability of success, I would wait till spring to do the transplanting. Because in springtime, the condition seems to be very ideal. It's a cool, moist condition that we have, and the plants are very vigorous, and they really want to uptake and grow really well. So wait till in spring to do it.
All right. There you go, Yolanda. Thank you for calling. Marlene in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Marlene.
Yes, hi. I wanted to ask the gentleman about my gladiolas. They came up fine this year, had nice greenery. The stalks came up fine for the flowers, but once the buds started to come out, they seemed to rot right on the stem. I have no idea what happened.
In gladiola, one of the major pests is thrips. Say, if you look into the flower buds of the gladioli, you would find this tiny insect under your 10x lens if you have, and it is all, you will find it amazingly in a 10x lens, you know, what kind of world, small world, you know, it is. You will find a lot of thrip activity in the gladioli. That causes actually, you know, the bulbs, the flower buds to rot or have some more deformed flower buds. So check for thrips activity. And, you know, we do have an extension publication that talks about controlling thrips. So you can follow the instructions on how to control it.
Yeah, thrips are can be miserable. That's for sure. So take a look at that publication as well, Marlene. Good luck. Thank you. Rich in Madison, your turn. Hi, Rich.
Hello there. First off, great advice on the raspberries. Yeah, that was good to know. I was just curious, a follow-up question to that, two questions actually, but would the unusual drought have any impact on the size of the raspberries would be my first question. And my second question, I've tried and tried with three blueberry plants, and I've tried to, you know, amend the soil to get my pH down, and I'm not having any luck. My question is, transplanting those blueberry plants into pots, how do I know that my soil, how do I keep my soil in the pots at the proper pH? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you. I love the show.
All right. Thanks.
Certainly, drought will have an impact on the fruit production as well, too. Say if the raspberries have not been watered very well, obviously the leaves are going to wilt, and that's going to affect, you know, your size of the fruit as well, too. Say generally, you know, if you have a drip irrigation system, or, you know, even if you have a soaker hose, you can also use that as well. And mulching would also be really helpful in for better production, fruit production as well. So all this information are explained very well in the extension publication. And one thing about the drought impact on the fruit production is that if you do have a drought, probably it's also going to impact the flower production as well too. And the fruit, the berries may not be able to keep up very well. And they will naturally drop off as well too because of the lack of moisture. So those are some other impact or effect of drought on raspberries. Going to a next question on blueberries, I get this question all the time. You know, how do I maintain my soil pH? So the very first thing is to try to make sure you're growing your blueberries in a soilless media. If you're living in an area where your soil is naturally above 7, your pH is above 7, then try to grow them in a soilless media. Say there are two ways to do that. Either you can grow them in a container or you can grow them in a trench system. Say in a container or a trench system, the soilless media should be peat, pine bark, or pine needles with some perlite. So these are the three ingredients. Peat, pine bark, you can get it in many garden centers, pine bark, or perlite. These three ingredients. And mix them up 1:1:1 ratio, and you fill it in your container and sprinkle some elemental sulfur. Sulfur is a slow releasing or slowly decomposing in a fertilizer. It's an acid fertilizer. And it takes about 3 months actually to break down to, you know, make your media slightly acidic. So if you do apply sulfur in fall, in next spring, your blueberry plants can be planted. But, you know, if you apply it in the springtime, it takes a while for the blueberry plants to get used to the media. And so you can decide, you know, when is the best time to do. My best recommendation would be to plant them in the springtime anyway, sprinkle some sulfur in fall and get the media ready and then plant them in the spring. If you're going in a trench system, dig a trench about like, you know, 10, 12 inches deep. Put up a landscape fabric in it because you don't want any of the tree roots actually taking advantage of the media, and then fill it up with the soilless media and plant your blueberries as well. Go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to say, so the mix is peat and is it pine bark, did you say?
Pine bark, yes. Peat, pine bark, and perlite.
And the fertilizer should be what?
Sulfur, the elemental sulfur.
Elemental sulfur. Okay.
Yes. Now, the blueberries is also a bit of a high maintenance crop. So after you add the soilless media, put some elemental sulfur in it. During the rest of the growing season, let's say from mid-May till about mid-July, about once in 3 to 4 weeks, you need to fertilize them with either using muriatic or any type of high acid fertilizer. So because the elemental sulfur is not going to give you the other nutrients like nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. So in order to supplement that, you need some sort of like, you know, other supplemental fertilizer, you know, that can actually, you know, provide you more acidic nature as well, too. So that's why you need to use more acid. So use those things.
All right. All good tips. Rich, thanks a lot for calling. Amanda emailed to ask, why did her mock orange bloom a second time? She thought they only bloomed one time in spring, which they did, but then they bloomed again.
Usually we do get this type of inquiry sometimes. You know, plants tend to rebloom back again. So that second flush of bloom is not unusual. It all goes back if the plant has been very stressed out. And then when suddenly when the pleasant condition comes in, they'll start to rebloom back again. So it is sort of like a natural phenomena that triggers some of these plants to rebloom. So enjoy those blooms again.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of callers mentioned that, you know, those raspberries may be small because they were wild raspberries from that one lady who called.
Yes, if you happen to grow a wild raspberries in either in near an understory of a trees and stuff like that, yeah, they will tend to have a naturally small ones, you know. Yes, definitely. And those canes will be very wild and they'll be all over the place.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sue called to suggest, by the way, for trees, for a great yard tree, Seven Suns.
Are you Cryptocordium myconoides, that is a scientific name for Seven Sunflower. I love this tree, Seven Sunflower. The beauty about this tree is that this is one of the trees actually that blooms in early fall. Most of the tree blooms in spring or in summer, but this tree blooms in fall. And in the flower panicle, there are seven florets. There are seven, you know, what do you call, like a sub-flowers. And that's why it's called Seven Sunflower. And this particular tree, you know, should be planted in more of a pot shade condition. But some people also plant them in full sun, but they'll take it really well. But definitely not to be planted in an open area that it gets beaten up by, you know, heavy wind. So it is hardy for southern part of Wisconsin, but not for northern Wisconsin. If you are in northern Wisconsin, plant them in a protected spot. The beauty of this tree is actually not only it blooms in the fall, but it has this beautiful exfoliating bark, and it has an added winter interest in the fall in the winter time because of the exfoliating bark. It is more of a shrubby appearance. It has a multi-trunk shrubby appearance as well. So,
well, as long as we're talking about sun and shade, there was a question here from Bill in Oregon, asked for recommendation for any fruit or berry plants that will produce in 50 to 75% shade. Primarily interested in feeding birds, but human-friendly is good too.
So fruits or berries that actually grows in more of a shade. So that's a very tough one to say. You know, because most of the fruits and berries, you know, that we grow in Wisconsin, they really need some full sun because for the light is the one that triggers them to grow. But of course, there are some, if you're living in a place in northern Wisconsin, you know, there are a lot of like, you know, you can also grow like, you know, wild blueberries. They tend to grow actually more in a shade, or even you can also grow some sort of like a thimbleberries. That also grows in more of in a, you know, partly in the shade as well too. So those are some of the plants that can, you know, more of an understory type, you know, that grows underneath the trees and, you know, that survive. So you can try some of the wild ones. So I think that'll be the best way to go.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Susan in Elk Mound emailed to ask how to prune honeyberries. Also, when and how should she move some 2.5 foot to 3-year-old honeyberry bushes? Should she wait until they are dormant?
Okay, honeyberries are, you know, Saskatoon berries, you know, it goes with a lot of different names, or huffcap. They hardly need any pruning, okay? This is one of the plants that, you know, it's more like a shrub. and it blooms probably early in the springtime. And it produces a lot of fruit beginning in the third or fourth year. And say you don't have to worry about pruning for it, but if it gets out of control, you can certainly knock down some of those branches or the twigs. You can do that. I would not worry about, too much about pruning this honeyberries or Saskatoon unless it's grown out of control. You can thin them in early in the springtime, or perhaps you can thin them after they're done with the flowering as well, too. Since it blooms in the, in springtime, it's better to prune them after they're done with the blossoms, usually probably in early June. Now, in terms of transplanting them, if you do want to transplant them early in the spring before the flower bud appearance happens. So 2 to 3 feet, you can easily scoop them out of the ground and you can transplant them early spring.
Jeremy in Eau Claire emailed, he has a 9-foot-tall hackberry tree that was, it's developed 2 strong co-leaders at around 6 feet. He knows which one he wants to cut off this winter. However, the remaining leader would be angled fairly severely, around 20 degrees from vertical. Should he attempt to tie it to stimulate it to grow more vertically, or just allow it to grow naturally?
So that is actually a natural hackberries, and that is also a cultivated hackberries as well, too. Hackberries tend to naturally produce these type of co-dominant branches. It is nature, the genetic nature for them. Say, if you do decide to prune one of the co-dominant leader, the other leader will naturally fill in back again because it'll sense us, okay, there is some more open space, and it will tend to grow towards that angle because it wanna take advantage of the more light and more space around them. So, but if you feel that the one of the other co-dominant leaders seems to be leaning up too much, then you could actually, prop them back again, by adding an extra support system, and you can try to, prop them back again early in the springtime. You can do that as well. But leave it like it is. See what happens first. It naturally should fill in back again and grow straight. Now, there is also another variety called Chicagoland hackberry. I like this particular variety of Chicagoland because it has naturally has a strong central leader. And most of this branches grows about 60 to 90 degree angle, rather than compared to the regular hackberries, Chicagoland one is more of a better suitable for urban areas.
All good points. You mentioned the question came up about staking. What are your thoughts on staking young trees?
There are mixed opinions on it. Some people feel that, if you stake them, then probably, you're not actually encouraging the root system to better adapt to this, landscape. So it all depends. Say this spring, we planted some barrowroot trees in our Kenosha County Center campus. And so these barrowroot trees are shallow planted. And, they'd be barely about 6 inches or 8 inches at the deep. And we had in an open area. In those kind of situations, I stake them for a couple of months or 3 months, and then I remove the stake. Initially for them to be more supportive, But if you're planting a ball and burlap trees, you don't have to stake it necessarily because the ball is actually heavy enough and the trees will also quickly adapt to the new landscape. So you don't necessarily have to. But if you're talking about a fruit crop, it's a different story. In a fruit crops, some of the, for example, in apples, some of those rootstocks are very brittle. And those rootstocks need to be, grafted. They need to be staked permanently. So it depends upon what type of rootstock you're using in the apple varieties.
Vijay, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. I want to remind our listeners to go to that little questionnaire, that little survey we've got. Go to WPR.org/Larry. Click on today's show note for a link. It'll take you about 2 minutes to fill that out, and we'd really appreciate it. Thanks again, Vijay Pandey, and horticulture educator for Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. Monday, our physical therapists are back to join us. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.